Welcome everybody on YouTube and everybody that we're kind of getting into here and getting into the Bible. And we have, as you probably know, we have quite a large following on our YouTube, well over 1,000 people who have subscribed to us. And I hear from many of them from time to time, and I talk to many of them on the phone. They'll either email me or, you know, and I'll call them back, or sometimes they'll just call me out. A lot of these people are guys who are within the ministry. I had one particular young man that I was talking to that wants to start a church, and he's really a good kid. And, you know, then I had another young man that has been following us, and he wanted some help. You know, he really wanted me to be able to lay out for him, you know, the structure and how a New Testament church should operate and work and the things with inside that a pastor needs to be able to understand. I label it the anatomy of a church. And but he wanted to understand how it works. And, you know, and what would the keys be to building it, really any ministry. And, you know, I mentioned it several weeks ago on a Sunday morning that we were going to do this, because I want to put this into a book that I can, you know, give to young men out there that are thinking about going into the pastorate, or guys that are already in. And So I mentioned that on that Sunday morning, and throughout the next week, I got about 7 or 8 more guys that contacted me and said, hey, we really need this, if you could do that. So I went to work on it. And what I'm doing tonight is directly for this young man. But if you're out there tonight and you're a pastor and you're finding you know, you're in way over your head, and it's not what you thought it to be, or you're having some issues, you know, this will help you if you'll apply it and you'll follow it. Or maybe you're somebody out there and you have a desire to be a pastor. And so whatever. Or you may be just working in somebody's ministry. The parallels between being a pastor and working in a ministry, even though you may not have the designated title, it's across the board. You know that it's pretty much the same thing. So that's what I want to do. You know, a great illustration of a church is a marriage, and marriages fail today. Many of you have worked with people who are you know, in marital issues and marital problems. Many of them get a divorce. And marriages fail today. It's simply because two people get into marriage, which God designed, and then they try to run it by another set of standards that God never intended it to run by. So, you know, they're doomed before they even, you know, get past the I do's. And so, you know, they'll enter into something married. They have no idea what marriage is in the Bible. They have no idea what the biblical protocol is for marriage. They think marriage is just two people saying I do, getting married, living together, and then raising a family, and then going on from there. And this is why marriages fail. Now, you take that same example, and you can apply it to why churches fail and dealing with a pastor. A pastor will take a church, he'll get involved in the church, and he has absolutely no idea how the church operates. You know, it'll fail miserably simply because they don't understand what it takes to make it work. It's just like a marriage. And that's why the examples are so relevant to each other. And through their lack of understanding, and many times they're unteachable. The guy keeps going from church to church to church, from failure to failure to failure. I am not kidding you. I have seen guys that they only last in a church about 2 or 3 years. And then some problem comes up, something happens, and then they find another one. Within within the circle of Baptist churches, and this is true of any group of people. It's true of the charismatics, it's true of the neo-evangelicals, but we're Baptists. Within the Baptist circle, there's a thing almost like musical chairs, only it's musical churches. You know, you go to a church for a while, you don't know what you're doing, you don't know how to build it, you make a lot of mistakes, and then either they oust you or it nosedives into the ground and you decide you're going to leave, and then you go to another one, and the process just continues, goes on and on and on. And you're going to find that I've seen guys over the years in my life in the ministry, I've seen them go, and some of them are friends of mine, and they're good guys. They're not bad people, but they just never have gotten an understanding of what it takes to make a church or a ministry work. And many times, they all do the same thing. They blame it on the people in the church. They'll blame it on, you know, well, then the deacons didn't do this, or, you know, the people didn't like me from the get-go, or I couldn't do this, or I couldn't do that. And they'll always blame it on somebody else. And everybody seems to do that. But you take a guy, going back to our marriage syndrome, you and I both know, because we work with people, you give me a guy or a woman who's had 3 or 4 failed marriages, and I'm going to tell you, you've got somebody who has a problem understanding marriage. And we would all agree with that. And most people would say, yeah, that's exactly right, because I deal with it. But you take a pastor who fails in 2 or 3, 4 churches, he has a problem in there too. And it's just that simple. And, you know, now, before I can really get into the anatomy of a church, and I understand the question, and I'm going to get to that next week, we need to first look at the anatomy of a pastor, because obviously the pastor is going to be key to it all. Now, someday, some of you may pastor someplace. Some of you, God may put into your life and call you, and you may wind up pastoring a church. All of you, for the most part, will work in ministry here to some level of degree. The principles are the same. But it's either the pastor will be the key to the church, just like that you will be the key to whatever ministry that you're heading up or you're working with. And there are several rules that a pastor has to follow to be successful. And most pastors are totally oblivious to this. Now, in adjacent to what I'm going to give you here today, the Bible is structured in such a way that you have what we call the pastoral epistles. You have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You have the book of Acts. Then you have the books that Paul writes. And then after he's finished writing to the 7 churches that he writes to, he writes 4 books to 4 pastors. And these are young men that he has won to Christ, and then they have taken churches under his teaching and under his direction. And for a young pastor, those books are invaluable. I don't have time to get into them tonight in any depth or detail. I've laid some of it out before. But you take when he wrote to Timothy, the first book, 1 Timothy. That is an amazing book for any young man that wants to go into the pastorate or into the ministry. And because in 1 Timothy, he lays out 12 charges to this young man, Timothy, that he instructs him in that he has to understand and follow if he's going to be a good pastor. And for anybody today who's a pastor of any church, these 12 charges are invaluable. And I've given them to you before. We don't have time to give them to you tonight. But down the line someplace, if somebody wants them, then I can give them to you. Then you get into the book of 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy is written to Timothy, who is a young pastor. And in this book, after he gave him the 12 charges, in this book, he tells young Timothy, the four things that he can never forget as a pastor. That's invaluable. Then once he's done with Timothy, then he moves into the book of Titus. Titus also is a pastor. And in the book of Titus, Paul explains, as he lays it out to him, he shows us what stewardship is, because a pastor has to first and foremost to be a good steward. So he lays out stewardship in Titus. And when you study that through the Bible, you'll find out that there are actually seven stewardships in the Bible that a pastor is to be a steward of, that he gives to his people. Everybody that I've ever been associated with in the ministry, either working for them or being associated with them, they always think that stewardship has to deal with money. And so they always use that to beat people over the head of who not giving that should give, and they always use the catalyst of stewardship. Truth of the matter is, in the New Testament of the seven stewardships, they're in one of them about money. But they are vitally important. Then you get into the book of Philemon. Philemon is also a pastor of a New Testament church. And here, Paul lays out to Philemon what the attitude should be of the pastor. And that's an incredible book. So starting out, you have four books in your Bible that really correlate all of the key areas that the New Testament says that a pastor should be. Paul was not a pastor. Now, everybody likes me, many times you use him an example, and hey, there's many, many, many examples of things that Paul did with churches, to churches, that we can learn from. But systematically, he's not a pastor. He's an evangelist. And we have the wrong idea of evangelist today based on just the way things are. I'm not saying it's wrong. Evangelists today are somebody who goes from church to church to church, and he preaches, he motivates, you know, gets people saved. You know, Billy Graham was evangelist. You know, Dr. Ruckman was in evangelism for years before he pastored a church. And, you know, they're all out there. And some of them are good, some of them are not so good, but that's what they do. In the Bible sense, an evangelist, just so you know the Bible definition of it, I'm not saying the guys today are wrong, but you need to understand the difference. In the New Testament, an evangelist was somebody like Paul that went from place to place to place, got a secular job. In his case, he mended fishing nets and tents, and then supported himself, and then started a New Testament church. Was there for a while, trained up somebody, Timothy, Titus, Philemon, who then took it over, and then he moves into another place. That's the Bible definition of an evangelist. Someone that goes into a place and will start a church, build a church, turn it over to somebody else, and go to another one, just so you understand that. So Paul was not a pastor. He was an evangelist. Your four examples were 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. They're tremendous books. They're called the pastoral epistles because these four guys were pastors. So, they're invaluable. We weren't going to get into that tonight. I can do that down the line someplace. So, the question is this. So, you want to be a pastor? I'm talking to a guy online here. And, you know, his question to me was, I want to be a pastor. What do I need to know? Well, let me start by saying this, and I'm as serious as a heart attack. If you have any other choice other than being a pastor, I suggest that you take that choice. I've been in the ministry 50 plus years. I have learned, believe it or not, I have learned some things. I've seen some great works where God mightily did some things. And I've seen some incredible failures too. And I'll tell you, and this is what you've got to understand. Being a pastor is not for the faint of heart. I've seen too many nice kids, too many nice guys. You know, being a pastor is not for the faint of heart. It's not for the thin-skinned person who wears his emotions on his sleeve or someone who takes things personal. It's not for the phony brave. It's not for the spiritual Pharisees. It's none of those things. And I've seen so many young kids that went to Bible college, come out to be a pastor, and just absolutely fail miserably. And there's a reason for that. Now, I love the ministry, and I love people. But if you're going to decide you're going to go into the pastorate, you need to set out and count the cost of what it's going to cost you. The pastorate will come with so many headaches and so many heartaches. Along with the blessings, and I will show you some of this in detail next week as we get into the bona fide anatomy of the church. But you better know this going in. And I try to, when some guys try to ask me about it, I try to tell them, I get it. If you've never experienced it, it's hard to think that it could be this way. But you better know this. You will invest your life to help people. You will teach them the Bible. You'll help them grow. You'll help them through tough times. You'll bury their dead. You'll marry their kids or them. You'll baptize them or their kids. And you'll invest all that you have in them. And they will throw you under the bus and turn on you faster than you could ever hope to think, that faster than a speeding bullet. They will deceive you. They'll lie about you. They'll lie to you as they walk out the door. Now, I say that not as a criticism. I say that so somebody will say, well, you know, poor is me, you know. No. It's none of that. This is the reality of ministry. It happens to everybody in the ministry. And, you know, people will blame you for things that you didn't do so they can justify themselves that they want to do whatever they want to do. It's just the way that it works. You're going to find that there isn't one church that anybody pastors that doesn't have this element. It's the ministry. But it's unseen by a young guy that's out there. I remember the night that I got right with the Lord. It was a Sunday night. I remember it like it was yesterday. The Lord had really been dealing in my heart and dealing in my life. And I'd just gotten out of the army. You know, my dad died. And, you know, and I knew that I was not where God wanted me to be. And I realized that God put me where he was in Canton Baptist Temple back there. And the great morning service, you know, that was the icing on the cake for me, was the morning that I went into, it was the first time I went in to Mel Sabaka, who later became my father in the Lord. I went into his singles class. Now, Barb wasn't even saved yet. We were dating, but she wasn't saved. My mom wanted to go back to church after my dad died. She'd been out of church for years and years and years. And so I went. And to this day, I can't tell you how I made my way into the single young adult class that Mel ran. And I'm sitting in the back. And they had a preacher there that was, Mel didn't preach that day. And his name was Tommy Thomas. Tommy Thomas was the director of the Brown Street Mission. Tommy Thomas was one of the last of the Philadelphian age preachers. He's probably 70, 75 years old. And he had been with guys that came out of the gangster area that got saved. And they were incredible guys. That morning, he was preaching. I was sitting in the back row. And I'll never forget this. He got up to the pulpit and he said, I want to preach to you on the second coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And he said, I want to ask you a question. Are you ready? And when he said that, he kind of grabbed his chest and he said it louder as he was slumping over. Are you ready? And the last time he said it, his knee was on the ground. And I don't care what anybody thinks, what everybody says. He was pointing at me. And with a loud voice and the last words out of his mouth before he went home to be with the Lord, he screamed out, are you ready? And died right there on the floor of a heart attack. Well, well, what do you do with that? Well, Mel got up and, you know, and he finished the sermon and preached. About 50 people got saved that morning. I sat in the back. And I knew that at that point in time, God had that old man point his finger at me for the last time and ask me if I was ready, and I knew I wasn't ready. I thought about that all day. I mean, it tore the whole church up. That night, I had done with it, and I went forward, and I surrendered my life to Christ. Now, I would, at that point, thought I was already saved. And because I had been made a profession years ago. That's neither here nor there. I went back and got right. And I remember it as sure as I'm sitting here. And a guy came over and put his arm around me and prayed with me and told me what I wanted to do. And I said, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was just tired of the life that I had. And I said, I want to serve the Lord. Well, so they put down on the card, full-time ministry. Well, little did I know, God was in that too. So, when I got up, people were shaking my hand, people were hugging me, slapping me on the back, everybody was praising the Lord. And if you'd have told me right then at that moment in time that some of those guys were smoking in the parking lot, drinking, not doing what was right, if some of those guys were having issues with other people in the church, using their power to hurt them, I'd have fought you to a standstill. I thought at that moment in time, and this is where a lot of guys going into the ministry fall into this. I thought at that time, everybody here is where they need to be with God. Hey, didn't take me long to find out that's not true. And when you get into the ministry, you're really going to find out it's not true. And again, it's not a criticism. It's the way the ministry is. And you're going to have to understand that. And it's a thing where there's a saying that we used to laugh about years ago, and it's really true. It's a thing that in the ministry, no good deed will go unpunished. And that is true a lot of times. I've seen men over the years, many of them, surrender to the ministry thinking that it was an easy thing only to fail. Somehow they got into their head or into their mind because, and I hear this a lot, because they were a good businessman, because they worked with people, you know, because they got along with everybody at Ford or GM or IBM or wherever they worked. I've had them say, well, I'm a people person, you know. One guy said, well, I'm already a supervisor of a bunch of people at a textile mill. I've seen them that really knew their Bible, and I've seen them that were really smart. I've seen them that had two or three degrees and were absolutely successful in life. So they think, so I ought to be able to go into the ministry and be a good pastor. That will be your first mistake that you make. The difference between, now you better listen to me. The difference between you being good at where you work, being a people person, being somebody who can get along with crowds and do all that, the difference between that and pastoring a church is the devil.
He doesn't care how good you are at Ford or IBM or wherever you work. But you take over becoming a pastor of the church, you're going to be in his crosshairs. And many times, he's going to use the very people that are in your church to do it. And that's something you got to learn. And again, that's not a criticism. That is a reality. And welcome to the ministry, man. It's what it is. And it's because this, being a pastor is not like any career or job you ever had. And that's where they make the mistake. The ministry of being a pastor is not a job or career, but a pastor is a calling. It's not a job or it's not a career. It's a calling from God. Now, you want the principle for that? It'll be 1 Samuel chapter 3. We've laid it out many times. This has gotten a man into deep trouble. So heed the warning. If you're listening to this, heed this warning. They not only hurt themselves, but their family suffers. When you go into the ministry as a pastor and you're dealing with a church with people, no matter how hard it's going to be on you, it's going to be three times harder on your wife. You have to have the right mate in ministry of pastoring a church. And I've seen too many of these guys go in and they'll lose their church for one of two reasons. They'll lose it because, I remember I was talking to Jim Lake when he was here the last time. We talk about things, you'll get caught up on stuff. And we were talking about a particular guy who has, this guy is a nice guy. I know him, I've known him for years. I love him to death. But this guy's been in about, he's never lasted in any church more than 2 or 3 years. And he's probably had, 10 churches in his lifetime. And we'll get laughing about stuff like that. And I said, I wonder, I've often wondered why a guy like that, why he just can't make it. And Jim knows everything, man. He's into that world. I'm not. And he said the answer to that is his wife. His wife causes him problems in every church that he's been. And sometimes if you don't have the right wife, that's exactly what happens. And she will cause you more problems than you can deal with, and we come back and bite you. The other one is that you got a good wife, and she, when you get attacked, she bears it 5 times worse than you do. And where you can defend yourself or deal with it, she has to sit there and just take it. So I am telling you, I've seen guys who thought because they were good in business that they could do the ministry. Many of them, their families pay the price. And I've seen these guys that they lose their kids. Their kids get bitter about it. The kids don't understand it. Dad doesn't have the ability to work with them and bring them along. Almost without exception, back in my day, the big mega churches that were Baptist churches, not the evangelical ones today, back in the day, every one of those guys that were pastors lost their kids to the world. And there was a reason for it. And it's one of those things, man. You need to count the cost. Sometimes when a guy gets in it when he shouldn't have got in it, because he called himself instead of it being God calling him, the whole congregation will suffer or get hurt. And in the process of a man calling himself and not God calling him, it's not a simple lifestyle. Pastoring will come with many rewards, but it also will require many huge sacrifices. It will cost you sometimes greatly. It will require for you to have the ultimate balance in your life between your family, what your ministry is, your people, and what you do. And if you don't understand the structure of being a pastor and have in your life the things that you have to make it work, you're going to be a disaster. I've seen some guys fail three or four or five times in trying to start a church. And when you see that in a guy, it's for most certain, and the guy just keeps going after it and he can't get it, it's a pretty good indication that he has called himself and that God has not called him. Because I'm going to give you a principle. You say God called you. You wouldn't sit there and say, well, maybe I called myself. No, no, no. Nobody ever wants to do that. God called you. Well, let me give you a principle. If God called you, what God ordains, God will sustain. And if he doesn't, just like the failed marriages, you got a guy that's married two or three, four times. We had a girl at one time that came to church here that was married 11 times. Now, don't you know those alimony checks check up at the end of the month? But anyway, it was a thing where, you know, you got some problems. And most pastors are so prideful that they won't stop and consider. So first thing I tell you is this, if you can do something else, do it. But if you do it, you better make sure God called you to do it, and you just don't want it so badly that you forsake the principles and you call yourself. And there's a lot of that going around today. Now, here's what I'm going to do for you. I thought about this ever since you asked this question. I'm going to give you, in the anatomy of a pastor, and next week, once we lay this out, I can give you the anatomy of the church, because the pastor is the key to the church. I'm going to give you eight, what I call the eight absolutes of pastoring, eight of them. And I follow these 100%. These were taught to me 45, 50 years ago. And I have them listed in my original Bible. I have them listed over in all my Bibles. And if I ever work with a young man on the internet or through this or through the phone and pastoring, this is where I take him. The eight absolutes of pastoring. Now, I'm sure that you could make it 10, 12, 15, whatever. But I want to give you what I consider the eight most important ones. Now, the first one, and you've heard me say this before, you here, but I'm saying it to you out here. The first thing you need to understand as a pastor, that everything rises and falls on your leadership. Everything. Ultimately, the success or failure of any church will be on the pastor's shoulders. Now, having said that, I've seen it all my life that they want to blame it on the people. They want to blame it on this family. They want to blame it on that. Now, you may have people that have problems in your church that give you problems, but if your church fails, it's because of failure of your leadership, plain and simple. And, you know, you have to look at your style of leadership. Your leadership should be one of confidence, based on the biblical principles and the models and the patterns, but never aggressive or threatening. I've seen so many preachers over the year that held their people in fear, that they were afraid to ask anything, afraid to do something, because they ruled them with a rod of iron out of fear. And you don't beat them through preaching and messages with your leadership to drive them. A pastor has to learn that he has to lead from the front. He can never be in the rear with a gear. He has to be out front. You know, he has to lead by example. You don't have your people do anything that you're not willing to do yourself. I've seen so many pastors, because they're above the common man, that they'll have their people go out and do the dirty work, but they will never go do it themselves. That is not leadership. You have to lead from the front. You don't live your life better than they do either. When your common people live in homes that cost, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000, you don't build a $5,000 home and live like you're in the millennium. You got to live on the same level that your people, otherwise you will lose touch with them. If you live in a place where you don't have to sweat out a bill here or something here or pray about what this is going to come in, you'll never identify with the people in your church that do. And most pastors can't get that. They think that, and they want their people to believe. There was a guy who, I knew this guy, and I really liked this guy, and he was a good preacher. And I haven't heard about him for years. But he would go around the pastors, and he was somewhat of an evangelist. He would go around the pastors, and he would tell them, look, if you give me money for my ministry out of your missions budget, I'll come in and preach, and I'll put your people in your hip pocket. He went to a church out in Montana, and he told the pastor out there that if you give me $5,000 for my ministry, I will make it so your people double your salary the night I preach. In other words, you do for me, I'll do for you. So that night, you know what he preached on? He preached to the people and beat the crap out of them. But he preached to the people that the Bible talks about a pastor deserves double honor. Now, the Bible does say that. He used it to say you need to double his salary, whatever it is. Now, this guy was making a good chunk to begin with. And that night, he got his check for $5,000, and the deacons called a meeting right afterwards after this guy's preaching and doubled the pastor's salary. And where the Bible says a pastor deserves double honor, it's not talking about doubling your salary. It's talking about you get honored here as a pastor, but you get honored at the judgment seat of Christ for what you do in the ministry. But this guy, he was a shyster, man. They are all through the ministry. One time years ago, he came into town, and I had a Monday night Bible study, which, you know, we ran 500-600 people. And he calls me up and he says, hey, can I teach Bible study tonight? Well, you know, I always took care of this guy. This is because I came before I figured him out. So, you know, I took up an offering for him that night because he was kind of into missions and, you know, that. And after he preached that night, I immediately saw what he was doing, and that was it. I never had him back, never used him again. And it was after that he did the thing out in Montana with the pastor out there. And you know, you have to realize that you cannot live above where your people live. And in time, you have to be able to, through your leadership, you have to be able to develop different spiritual levels of growth that you can lead them in. In time, you need to get them to the upper levels of getting into the Bible a little bit deeper. And, you know, and you got to bring them along. Leaders lead. And these absolutes, eight absolutes, are based on the principles found in the Bible, and I will scatter them through here, and we'll get into them next week when we look at it. Now, the second thing. And a pastor, you need to understand this. As a pastor, your church will be a snapshot of who and where you are spiritually. It's just that simple. The development of your church's spirituality will always be in accordance with where you are at spiritually. If the Word of God is not number one in your life, you will never get it to be number one in their life. If you're, you know, your church will be what you lead them to be. It will never rise above your spiritual leadership. If you're not excited about the Bible and the Word of God, they won't be either. It's much like a father and his family. And you hear me say this all the time. You know, your kids, or as a pastor of your church will be a reflection of who you are spiritually. You know, the church as a family will never grow beyond the pastor or the father's spiritual level. They never will. And you will find that a pastor has to be able to do 10 things really well. And this comes out of your ability to understand the people you're working with. First off, a pastor needs to be an educator. He needs to educate people in the Bible. To do that, the second thing, he needs to be a communicator. He needs to learn how to communicate to people. The third thing, if he's going to do the first two, then he needs to learn how to relate to people. You can't live up in an ivory palace someplace and have your servant people down here and never see them. I always tell people this, wherever you go to church, and I don't care where it is, if your pastor won't give you his cell phone number personally, find another church. If you got to go through some axiom of a secretary to get to your pastor that you can't call him up 24/7 when you have a need, you're in the wrong place, and you got a guy who don't have a calling, he got a job. And it's a thing where he has to be able to relate. He has to learn, the next thing, how to accelerate. He has to learn how to get you to learn the Bible quicker by putting things into your life that he has learned, that he has paid the price to learn, that now he can make it easier for you to learn. He has to learn how to be able to elevate people, bring people up through the spiritual levels. He has to learn how to motivate people. He has to learn how to generate people, get them to the point where you can generate things in their lives, in the ministry. He needs to be able to duplicate people. In other words, reproduce yourself. They reproduce their self, which is the basic New Testament Christianity, winning people to Christ. And then the last thing, he needs to learn to placate. You need to be able to take care of weak people. You need to be able to understand that not everybody is going to be strong and where you want them the first time you meet them. And you're going to have to put up with some things. This is the ministry. You don't know, the ministry is one place, you know, it's where you don't always get it the way you want it. Most of the time you don't. And you've got to learn to work with that. You've got to learn to be able to deal with that. And you've got to be able to take people who are not perfect, who maybe have some really cranky ideas about things, and help them get along. And, you know, you see a man's, you know, spiritual level, and you try to get him to be better at what he does, but you've got to have a process to do that. Third thing. A New Testament local church, and this is based on the book of Acts. And, you know, a New Testament local church based on the book of Acts will always be started by a sending church. And men who start a biblical work will be sent out. They'll never just go out. The church today is under tremendous attack. There's no question about that. And this is the reason why that you don't just want to go out and do what you do. In most cases, that it will be a failure. I know when I left Canton, Ohio and came here, if I wouldn't have had my father in the Lord to help me through the things that I was getting into, that I never realized what the ministry was, I'd have failed miserably. This is the networking that God intended that you see in the book of Acts, where Paul starts these churches, but these churches never forsake Paul. They always are looking to him. He's giving them continuous advice. He's giving them, I mean, he's the apostle to the Gentiles. He's giving them the insight and helping them. They would have all failed miserably if they wouldn't have had Paul in their life. And I would have failed miserably if I wouldn't have had Mel Sabaka in my life. And, you know, you build a network of Bible-believing churches that work separately, but they all work together and help each other. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's probably one of the most important aspects of pastoring, that you don't try to do it alone. You know, I talked to a guy here several weeks ago, you know, a young guy who's not, he wants to start a church. And I told him, I said, look, you're getting into something that you have no idea. I said, you sound like a really nice kid and a really good kid. But I said, I'll tell you right now, when it comes to the ministry and pastoring, you're very naive. And you better have some people, a pastor, somebody in your life that works with you and helps you to keep you, because you're going to get into situations that you don't, and if you think you can handle it on your own, that's a second mistake you're going to make. And I'm telling you, when it comes to being a pastor, you can't pick and choose what you want to follow or apply out of the Bible. You know, it needs to be, as Acts 20:27 says, the whole counsel of God. I've watched how certain pastors will simply have a double standard. I see it all the time. I mean, they'll have one standard for their family, one standard for maybe the other pastors that work in the church, and have another standard for the people. And, you know, picking and choosing out of the Bible what you want to follow. You can never do that as a pastor, but there's a lot of that going on today, because there's certain parts of the Bible that if you're a pastor, if you follow them, you're no longer a pastor. And that's a pretty good proof that you called yourself and God didn't call you. I'm telling you now, if you ever become a pastor, you cannot pick and choose out of that book what you want to believe. Now, the fourth thing. You build people, you don't build buildings. We all know the story of back in the day of the church over here in Independence that we went to for a while. And New Hope was the name of it. In fact, it still is New Hope. They got a good pastor now. But back in the day, the pastor was there that I knew him very well. And I really liked him, and he helped me. In fact, he preached. We started this church out of his church. He sent me out. Preached the first service in our kitchen back in the day. But he was old school, and he never really, and he told me, you know, he gave up the church, and he told me that, you know, that he left the church in really, really good shape financially. He said, there's like $400,000 or $500,000 in the bank. He says, I've left the church really good. But here's where he failed. He never trained people. He built buildings. And so when he left the church, he had to call another guy because he never trained anybody to take his place. He may have left the church financially in good shape, but he left the church spiritually in terrible shape. So they called this guy in. This guy came in as pastor. He burned through that $400,000 in no time, got hooked up with the piano player, and then you all know the story, murdered her husband. And he got sent to prison, found out just last week that he died in prison, got 25 years to life. And the church almost didn't survive. But then they got a good guy over there, and he's kind of brought the thing back, and it's a good, healthy church at this point. But my point is this. As a pastor, you build people. You don't build buildings. I've never worried about a building. When we first started way over there at the pavilion years ago, back in the Stone Age, I didn't look for that. One of my guys found that, and the lady was so happy, she brought us right in. We were there for a while. When we moved over to the Apple Center, I wasn't looking for that. Larry Lester came over, called me over to his office and says, I want to give you this building down here. Do what you want to do with it. When we had to leave that situation, God dropped this one in our lives. I've never worried about a building. You know why? I learned a long time ago, I will take care of my responsibilities and God needs to take care of his. My responsibility is building people. God's responsibility is to make sure I got a place to do it. And I've never vacillated off of that. And it works. You have to build people. People are going to come with issues. A pastor has to see in a person's life and the ministry the big picture. You can't just see what the issue is. You got to look at the panoramic view of it all. And the best advice I can give you is people are going to come with issues. Use your personality skills to love them. You're going to have a lot of patience. You're going to have to be long-suffering. You can't want them to be where you think they should be when they're not. You have to care for them. You have to understand them. You use your people skills and all your abilities as a pastor and as a leader to diffuse problems, not add to them. You never cause a problem where you don't have one just because you don't like something. And they will arise, and you are going to have to deal with them. But you look for avenues that are peaceful, for avenues where you can help them through it, teach them through it, and get involved in their lives to help them solve the issues. You have to get, when they come into your life with all kinds of problems, you're not going to be able to fix their problems in an hour, 2 hours. But when they leave there, you want to give them two things. You want to give them hope, and you want to give them a plan. And then you want to tell them that you'll be there to help them with that plan. You know, learn this lesson, young man. Life is about choices. And we all make choices in life. The best choices in life that we all make will be the ones that we don't make by ourselves. We have the principles of the Word of God, a pastor, good Christian friends that love the book, that know the book, and the Word of God itself. That together you make those choices. You don't have to make them by yourself. Because when you do, you're in the danger of making a bad choice. You have to give them a hope. You have to give them a plan. If you have caused an issue in somebody's life, then you deal with it. You take responsibility for it. You take ownership of it. And then you try to fix it. You never seek to cause a problem where there is no problem. You do your best to de-escalate issues. People have different personalities. Too many pastors just look at the problem and not see the person. That is dangerous. Anybody can look at the problem. That is a very limited scope. You have to train yourself to look at the big picture and you look at the person. Because when you look at the person, most generally you'll find what the issue is. And you have a better way of trying to fix it. Not everybody will agree all the time. You need to be able to turn a mountain into a molehill instead of a molehill into a mountain. And not everybody will always be workable. But you need to always be workable. The fifth thing, and this one is vital. And boy, do guys hate this one. Wow. If you're going to be a pastor, your own family has to be where they need to be in the Lord. This will be one of the most violated principles in all the Bible for pastors anywhere in churches. I am not kidding you. And the principle for this is found in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5, where it says, in verse 1, it is a true saying, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth the good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, nor striker, nor greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous. Verse 4, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. Then here comes verse 5, and this is the killer. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? The answer to that is he won't be able to, because the two are the same. I showed you that a little earlier. Now, what do you do with that? I'll tell you what most guys do with that. They pick and choose what they want to do. Nothing will define who you really are as a pastor, spiritually as a pastor, than your children. When I look at a man's ministry, when I would go preach someplace, or I'd go here, or I'd go there, don't do it anymore, but I've been everywhere, believe me, man, I've seen it. I would go to first, I would see a great church, I would see a great preacher. The first thing I would look at is his kids, because they are the litmus test of where his spirituality is. It's just that simple. Guys don't like this. Oh, they do. They will try to do everything in their power to get around this passage. But at the end of the day, you can't get around it. It's just that simple. Nothing shows that you have called yourself and never had the calling of God more than this verse right here. And if you're a pastor, I mean, just look at the logistics of it. You're a pastor, and your kids are in the world. Hey, I've seen pastors who they put out this great spiritual facade. They knew the Bible. They do all this stuff. I've seen them all my life, and their kids are out there in the world. They're posting stuff on Facebook. It's incredible. But everybody wants to circumvent this one principle. And I'm telling you, you know, how do you stand? I've even seen them where the pastor's kids were lesbians or homosexuals. I've seen them where they were unsaved. They wouldn't go to their church. I've had guys out of my church years ago. They didn't like it here. He couldn't get his kids to come to church here because the mom and the dad were deadbeats, but he fashioned himself to be a pastor. So you know what? He left his church, went to start a church, and the reason he went to start a church is so my kids will finally come to a church. You know what? They didn't go to his church either. And after 3 or 4 years, it's an empty building. And he don't go to church anywhere now. Nothing. Not a thing. And yet, if you would have asked him, did God call you? Oh, yeah, God called me. No, God didn't call him. He called himself. Because what God ordains, God sustains. And it wasn't a fact that his church didn't want to come, his kid didn't want to come to this church. His kid didn't want to go to any church. And they're the biggest bunch of zeros you ever saw in your life. And it's a thing where you have to understand this principle. I mean, how do you stand in the pulpit? How do you stand in the pulpit Sunday after Sunday and give advice to people in your church of how they're to raise their kids when you couldn't raise yours? Let me ask you a question. You got $10,000 in your pocket. You're my new best friend. You got $10,000 in your pocket. And you say to me, I want to invest this money. I want to get a return on my money. I want to invest it. And I said, good. I think that's a good idea. And you said, I'm gonna check some guys who are investment guys, and I'm gonna find to make take my $10,000 and make a good investment. Okay, you got two guys. You got one guy over here that takes investments, like Donald Trump, and takes $10,000 and develops into $1 million. Then you got one guy over here that you give him all of his money. He makes bad investments. You lose your money, get nothing on the return because he's lost every investment that he's ever tried to make. Which one are you going to put your $10,000 in? It's a no-brainer. Well, your children are your $10,000, and you better get him with somebody who understands how to make the right investments. And I'm telling you, I don't know how they do it. I know one guy, you know, he's got a church, probably 4 people. His boy's a homosexual. And so what he does is he preaches against homosexuality all the time. He just hammers it. And you know what? He sees nothing wrong with the fact. So what do you do when your kid has problems? Are you going to go to a guy like that? You got a pastor whose son committed suicide. Really? And you're going to listen to him to tell you how to raise your kids when it didn't work for him? And people are okay with that today. They really are. I don't understand it. It's a thing where too many people pick and choose out of that Bible what they want to believe because they just have to be a pastor.
And God never called them based on this. But boy, we get rid of that real quick and we just sidestep that issue. Don't bring it up. But it's there. Sixth thing. Being a pastor is going to be a lifetime calling. You don't retire from being a pastor. It ain't like working at Ford or GM or IBM or some company where you can legitimately retire. You don't retire from being a pastor. Now, you may come to the point where there may be some extenuating circumstances where your health renders you from doing it, or your wife's health and you have to get out for that reason. I get that. That's totally legitimate. But this idea of I put in my 30, 40 years and now, you know, I've served God, so now I'm going to get out and I'm just going to, you know, enjoy my senior years. You know, Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 8 tells us there is no discharge from this war. You don't get out of being a pastor. You go to you can't go anymore, and then you go a little more. Now, there's a principle in the Bible on that. I'm going to let you find that. I knew lots of examples of this, but one that comes to my mind is the guy that years ago, he pastored here in South Kansas City. Really good preacher. I mean, this guy could preach the paint off the walls. I loved to hear this guy preach. He was really good. And he had a Baptist church down here, South Kansas City. And, you know, he got to be 65 or 67 or whatever it was, and then he officially retired. He left the ministry. They had a guy that worked in the church with him for years who desperately wanted to pastor that church. Now, this kid, he couldn't pastor anything. I mean, he was I knew him for years too. Nothing about the Bible, had no clue. Well, he finally got what he wanted. And he ran that thing right into the ground. And the church is still sitting there, but it isn't a Baptist church anymore. So he retired. One day I was going to lunch and I was going over at Chili's over here and I ran into him. And we talked and, you know, a nice guy. I like the guy. And we talked and that's when he told me. He says, you know, I said, how's your church going? And he says, oh, I've retired. And I said, oh, really? And he says, yeah. He said, you know, I gave it 30 years. And he said, it was time for me to take a break after 30. And I'm thinking to myself, 30, you should have retired after the first year and gave the other 29 years to somebody else. I mean, you didn't do squat. And then he was meeting this pastor for lunch. He says, yes, once a month I meet brother so-and-so. We have lunch and then we go play golf together. And I said, how's he doing? Oh, he's retired and, you know, he's just living a life now. You know, he put in his time. And I'm thinking to myself, anybody want to show me anybody in the Bible that did the Lord's work that retired? Are you kidding me? You either went till you died or somebody killed you. There's no retiring. You get into the pastorate, you don't quit. Truth of the matter is, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and you're growing the way you should in your churches, by the time you hit 60, 65, or 70, you may not be able to do the physical things anymore, but as far as what you know about the Bible and teaching young men and young ladies, you're in your prime. Moses didn't come on strong till he was 80, 90 years old. Oh, no. We got to go down to Florida, the dinosaur graveyard, play golf for the rest of our lives, you know, because we serve God faithfully. My God, don't get me started on it. The ministry as a pastor is like your family. Your family should be something you're building a heritage for God that carries on. Your church should be training up men and women that after you're gone, it keeps going on. It never stops. It's an ongoing thing till Jesus comes. When this guy left and retired, turned it over to this guy, church is gone now. Akron Baptist Temple, it's gone now. They're tearing it down. Detroit, gone now. They're all gone. And they're all gone because the guys got to a point and said, well, you know, I've done good now for 30, 40 years. I'm just going to retire and sit back and just enjoy life. You know why they do that? If you ain't figured it out yet, I'll tell you. You know why they do that? Because it was always a job to them. It was never a calling. There's no end to a calling of God in your life as a pastor. If it's a job, then it's going to be an end and you will retire. If it's a true calling, show me where God ends the calling so you can go play golf in Florida. Old Mel Sobaka used to say, you know what? You know, when somebody would say to him, are you going to retire? He'd say, I don't retire. I'm just going to refire. A lot of truth in that. Well, the next thing, number seven, moving along here. Yeah, if you're going to be a pastor, let me just tell you this. Get the idea of a mega church of 2,000 or 3,000 people out of your head. In the times that we live in Laodicea, you cannot build a mega church without compromising to the world. I am just telling you, you can't. Every mega church out there that you're going to point to me and show me, I'm going to show you, just look around you, they all do four things. They all dump the King James Bible. They all bring the world's music and the world in it. They all have no doctrine in anything they do. And they build a church that you can do everything that the world does and be okay and still come to church. They're not separated from anything except God and the Word of God. You want to find the example for this? It's Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. The Laodicean church is the church that has put God outside the church, and he's knocking on the door to get back in. Now, the model for the size of church you should have, the pattern for that, we found in 1 Samuel chapter 22. We'll get into that in detail next week. Let me tell you this, and I'm telling you the truth. You have a church of 2,000 or 3,000, you cannot take care of all those people. You cannot, as one man, handle it. And so then what you do is you hire 40 or 50 other guys to do it for you. And that is not their job. If you're the pastor, it's your job. 200 churches of 100 people each will get more done than a church of 2,000. Because you can deal with them on that level. The pastor can train them. You go to a church of 2,000 or 3,000 people. They're big. They're great. It's spectacular. And the pastor doesn't even know who you are. He doesn't care who you are. Now, where's the principle for this? You see, there's many things that you'll learn in the Old Testament that even though it's not in the New Testament, it'll be great pictures of what principles we need to follow. But almost without exception, any church of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, there'll be an apostasy because of the four reasons I gave you. Just check it out. Don't take my word for it. And what they do then is everybody thinks the bigger you get, the better you are. So they get a competition with each other to have the biggest congregation. And now the false idea is put out there that the bigger your church is, that means the more God is with you. Now, let me destroy that for you by taking you back and showing you the principle that cancels that out. It's in 1 Chronicles chapter 21 and then again in 2 Samuel chapter 24. And you know what the problem was? It was a problem when David numbered the people and took pride in how many people they had instead of giving the honor and glory to God for God to take care of them. And brother, go back and look at the price that he paid for that decision. And these churches today are following in the same footsteps. They're numbering the people
for their pride of a national church that look who we are and what we have. And they'll pay the price for it at the judgment seat of Christ. And 99% of God's people are okay with that. This just goes to show where everybody's at with it. Well, the last one, number 8. We're doing pretty good here. And you better learn this one. In the ministry, you will lose people. I'm going to show you why that is next week. I mean, the number of reasons for that, from the fact that somebody moves away or somebody starts a church or somebody just gets mad over something and they leave. Also, you got the world, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and the old prophet from Bethel, you know, that system. But that's okay. You know, as a pastor, you've got to understand that that is part of the process of pastoring. It's part of the ministry. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. You have to understand going in, if you teach the truth and hold to the truth and have only one standard and you hold to it, the Word of God, a church like that today will not be for everybody. And that's just the way God intends it to be. And it's okay. You're going to find that some of you people say this to me all the time, and I appreciate your observance. You know, all through my ministry, you know, people come and people go. Sometimes they go for the good reason, sometimes they don't, but it doesn't matter. It's part of it. But there isn't a time, and you guys point this out to me. I see it, but I never say anything about it, but you see it. You'll see that a family will get mad and leave, or this will happen here. And then over the next couple of months, God will bring in 4 more families to cover the spaces. It's an incredible thing. That's why you don't get upset about it. I mean, it's one of those things that it's okay. You don't take it personal because you know that when you have a church that preaches in the day and age that we live in, what we preach and hold the line, what it's supposed to hold, hey, if anybody can build a church of 2,000, if you let the world come in, I mean, if you tell them they can smoke and they can drink and they can do marijuana and they can fornicate, and there's one church here in town that has a homosexuals Baptist church, or, well, it's an evangelical now, but they have a homosexual pastor on their staff, and they let homosexuals be part of the church ministry with this criteria. You can be a bona fide homosexual, and we'll let you pastor here and work with people as long as you're not practicing homosexuality. Yeah, and people are okay with that. This is what you're into today, man. Now, if you just got the boring old King James Bible and you got the truth and putting the truth out, how do you compete with that? How do you compete with a church where you can drink, smoke dope, and do whatever you want to do? I know one church they put on their Facebook that they went out for lunch together. This is the church staff and secretaries. And they stacked up their shot glasses and took a picture of it and put it on before they went back to work at the church. And they laughed and said, we can have these because we don't have to teach the Bible tonight in Bible study. Here you are, see? And God's people are okay with that. If you're going to build a church, that's what you're competing against. You're competing against with a system that will tell people out there that don't want to do right anyhow, that you can do everything the world does, but if you come here, you'll still be spiritual because we'll never preach against those things. See what you're up against? That's why all the churches that are Bible-believing churches like ours, you take Peacock's church down in Florida, Bible-believing church. You take Ruckman's church. You take Jim's up in Mount Pelier, Vermont. You take the guys all across the country that are like us, that believe the Bible, preach the Bible. All of their churches are right in the same line of about 200-300 people, and that's where they usually stay because it's a turnover process. And, you know, you get to a church of 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000, you can't minister to those people. And so you got to entertain them. And don't ever be in the entertainment business. It just doesn't work. And I've always been just, you know, when Jaden Miller comes down here from Lincoln, I always call him J. Frank Norris. He'd be J. Frank Norris to me till the day either I die or he dies. And the story behind that is that when he was in high school, they had a thing where you could pretend, you could have to mimic some great person in history. Some did George Washington, some did Abraham Lincoln, some did this, you know, and you had to give a 15-minute demonstration based on that person. You know who he did? In a public school, he did J. Frank Norris. So forever, he's J. Frank Norris to me. You'll hear him come down here and I'll have him pray. I'll say, J. Frank, would you pray? In fact, they went down to Texas with his mom and dad. They sent me a picture of J. Frank Norris's grave. J. Frank Norris has always been, boy, he's a guy I would have liked to have met. I've tried to learn everything that he taught these guys. And that's why he was dead by the time I got back into it, but there were still a lot of guys around. They're all dead now, but they were his boys. And, oh, I would sit down with them and I'd try to find everything else that he would tell them when he would send them out. Boy, you ought to see some of the stuff that he, it's a lot of it's the same stuff I give you, and I didn't get it from him. We just, this is what you do. But in the 1940s, he was telling his preacher boys that were going to go out and start churches. He says, men, never forget what I'm about to tell you. He says, you're going to lose people in the ministry. You're going to give yourself to them. You're going to preach. You're going to do all the right things, and people are going to leave. He says, that's okay. Never forget this. The folk, boy, what a, he said, the folks who make a real investment in your ministry, you will keep them forever. The folks who won't or don't will always be temporary people looking for a better deal. And the reason for that is, guys, is because they made no investment in what you're trying to do. And you'll see that next week when we get into it. And then he gave them one of the best pieces of advice that you could ever have. And boy, I've followed this for 50 years, man. He says, never focus on the ones you lose, but always stay focused on the ones that God gives you to do the work with you. He says, never forget, they will make an investment in your life based on the investment you make in their life. And he says, the loyalty of people through ministry will be a two-way street, because it has to be a dual loyalty. You have to be loyal to them and invest in them, and then God will give you out of the church the folks that will rise to occasion to be loyal to your ministry and invest in what you do. And I thought about that for a long time, and then I found the Old Testament principle where this gets played out. And it's in 2 Samuel chapter 23, verses 15 through 17, David and his mighty men of valor. Out of all of the nation of Israel and all the armies of Israel, there was a group that David invested in, and they invested in him. And when you read that story, you'll see the three or four attributes that those people had as they invested in ministry. And I'll show you that next week when we get into the anatomy. But it's a dual loyalty. Now, you have what the pastorate is. His role is now defined for you. You know, all the patterns that I gave you, we didn't get into them tonight, but there was a bunch of them. But I gave you Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. And then I gave you 1 Samuel 3, 1 Samuel 22, 2 Samuel 23, 1 Chronicles 21, 2 Samuel 24, and then Revelation 3. That's just a few. These are the principles that you need to learn,
that you instill in you as being a pastor that you take and use in dealing with the people that God gives you. And a pastor's church will never rise above his own spiritual level. And next week, now that I've given you the anatomy of a pastor, I'm going to take you in and answer your question and show you the anatomy of a New Testament local church based on the New Testament pastor. These two lessons, as I said earlier, I think, are going to go into a book form. And I always like to, you know, think about how you put a title page on it. When I did my marriage, Seven Principles of Marriage, you know, I decided, you know, because people don't understand about marriage, if you look at it in a bookstore, there's a wedding cake. And you know, on a wedding cake, you always have a bride and groom. Well, in the front of the book, if you look at the cake, the bride's got a gun pointing at the groom, and the groom's got a shotgun pointing at the bride, because marriage has problems. So this book, I think, going to put on a cover of it with a picture of somebody who kind of looks like me drawing it, sitting back and laughing, and then the title is going to be, "So You Want to Be a Pastor." Had to give it to him, man. It's not a job, folks. It's a calling. So we'll hold up there. Hey, I need your help here. Anita Poole's funeral is this Saturday, 10 o'clock for the calling, 11 o'clock for the service. Tonight, this is what I need. Has your sister talked to you yet? Okay, so you know. You got a third lady?